Rodgers in trouble. It's going to get there. He turned 32 yesterday. Does he have a vintage moment in it? In the end zone, it is caught for the win. Richard Rodgers with a walk-off touchdown. A game ender for the Packers.
Welcome to the Glass Half Empty podcast on the Big Lead. I'm Ryan Glaspiegel. Our guest today, we're lucky enough to get Dave Portnoy, founding editor of Barstool. Dave, how are you doing today?
Doing well, thanks.
So the last time we spoke on this podcast was a little bit over 2 years ago, and you had just sold a majority stake in Barstool to Peter Chernin. And the premise of our conversation and the story I wrote was that you and your bloggers were betting on mainstream viability. And this is going to sound like a really softball question, but these last 2 years have to have even like exceeded your wildest expectations in terms of both revenue and audience growth, right?
Yeah, we're way ahead of where I think myself, Chernin Group, everybody involved thought we'd be at this point. Yes.
So you've got like a bunch of different like tentacles to the business that I don't think anybody could have even foreseen. Can you talk about the SiriusXM channel and how that's going?
Yeah, so we launched our probably about a year and a half ago. We got one show on Sirius, Barstool Radio show that I basically was hosting, and then Kevin Clancy, KFC, came on and kind of did it with me. That turned into a full channel. So we now have our own 24/7 channel that I control all the programming on. It's Channel 85, so Barstool 85. It's been going since January, like mid-January. We started maybe second weekend of January. So it's been going great. The feedback from Sirius has been that it's outside of Stern, one of their strongest stations that they have, if not the strongest besides Stern. So it's been really successful so far.
Other than your own flagship show, what's one that you've been like really happy with how the content is going?
You know, I'm happy with all of it. Evening Yak, which is a show that comes on after me, that Big Cat hosts with a bunch of our other bloggers here, has been really successful, which Dan obviously has a very passionate, large following, so I figured that would be. The Breakfast, all the shows have been good. The Breakfast Show, we have Julie Binks hosting with Willie Colon and Francis, who's a blogger. And then the most surprising, probably people seem to love my dad. Like my dad and my cousin Murray were just two old dudes, like 70-year-old guys. I don't even know how it happened. They have a show, an hour show a day that people love. It's really hard to explain, but people do love it. I just saw, I think it's like the third most downloaded show that we have, people searching for it. But everything's been good. Dallas Braden just launched a show a couple weeks ago. So everything's moving in a pretty good direction, I think.
And then you guys also acquired an amateur boxing promotion, Rough and Rowdy, in the Appalachias. Am I crazy that I think that 24 to 36 months from now, you guys might make more money from Rough and Rowdy than any other individual facet of Barstool?
No, I think there's a chance that Rough and Rowdy could make more than all the other assets that Barstool has combined. Like, I think the potential is gigantic for Rough and Rowdy. So we just did we've done three pay-per-views with Rough and Rowdy. One of them we weren't an owner of. We just went and did it. And I think the pay-per-view, we started at $5. The first one we did before we owned it, we did 12,000 buys at $5. The second one we did 34,000 at $9.99. And this one we bumped up to $15.99. Well, it's $9.99 if you bought it before the day of the fight, and we did 41,000 pay-per-views. So, and people seem to love it. That's the most important thing. It's growing, but I think it could be a really, really huge thing. That's why we bought it, and nothing has happened yet that has made me think the sky isn't the limit for it.
Are you concerned at all that you might need your bloggers or your personalities on the card in order to sell a sufficient amount?
Yeah, I mean, That's certainly something we're going to find out. I don't think that's the case. When we bought Rough and Rowdy, the goal, I never anticipated our guys fighting at all. It just kind of developed organically the first couple of fights. And if people volunteer to fight because they want to challenge themselves or they want a chance to win the money, I'm fine with it. But for me, the content is so entertaining, so perfectly Barstool. It's serious. It's real fighters. It's real drama. It's real comedy. It has everything that our fans like. When I've seen it, so I covered Rough and Rowdy years ago, and every time I've gone, I've been blown away by the content. I didn't know the fighters. To me, that's what sells it. If we can't sell it without Barstool people fighting, then what I just said will never happen. It won't grow to what I think it can. But I am convinced that it's good with or without our guys in it.
How many states do you think you can get it sanctioned in?
I would say we can probably, right now, I would say about half the states. Currently, we are legally okay to go in. We're going to North Carolina for the next one. And then we have a list of the rest of the year of probably like six different states that will move around. And we'll actively, that's part of the challenge. Every state in boxing has their own commissions, their own rules. So you got to pitch them one by one. But I think like and this is all things we thought about. I think UFC, to a degree, has paved the way for a lot of states. Like New York, they just made UFC legal 2 or 3 years ago. So, you know, new ideas are coming, and, you know, we can make money. We can fill businesses and fill venues and make everybody money. So hopefully more states will allow it.
And I know that the Turning Group has delved into this with Chad Millman's Action Network, but it would seem that if legal gambling comes to pass in the next couple of years, that it will be gigantic, not just for Rough and Rowdy, but for any number of different ways Barstool can go with its business. How are you guys planning for that right now?
I would say we're planning for it thoroughly. We have a gambling crowd, so I think it'll open up gigantic advertising revenue streams for us. We've always done very well with the fantasy sites and things like that. You know, Rough and Rowdy, I don't think it'll affect at all, because it's really hard to put a lot of money on guys you have no idea if they're any good. I just think it'll add revenue streams, not only for us, but everybody in this space.
Yeah, in terms of like advertisers or affiliate deals, there's like a million different things that you guys can do. Yeah. You've alluded a few times to the fact that you really don't want to be dependent on advertisers. And one of the things you're considering doing is opening up a subscription platform. Maybe like you'll keep some stuff on the site, that the stuff that's free now will be free, and the subscription would be additive content. I'm interested, are you able to reveal any specifics on that, or is it still too much in the development process to talk about?
No, we can. I mean, that is coming, and it'll probably come April, May time frame, and you're right. For the most part, nothing that was free in the past will suddenly be behind the paywall, but an example of something that may come. You know, people like, for example, the original KFC Radio was a podcast that was Big Cat, KFC, and Feidelberg. With the advent of Part of My Take, Big Cat didn't really have time to do both and concentrate all the efforts. So something like a KFC Classic, where once a month those three get back together for a KFC Radio old school style, that will appear on the premium. So it'll be new things that we weren't doing before. It is a priority of Churnin, so it's something that I'm sure not all of our fan base is gonna love, but it's coming whether they want it or not.
Do you see it being like audio, video, both?
Everything. It's going to be a combo of everything. It could be you get discount and merchandise. You could get an extra podcast a month from your favorite podcast. It could be new. It could be videos that didn't exist before, maybe behind the scenes. It'll be a mishmash of a bunch of stuff.
One of the things that you've also talked about over the years is that you've got like an engaged audience that consumes everything. And I saw you and Erica both shared a Digiday story today about like the dangers of quote unquote renting a Facebook audience and being dependent on these platforms. Is it really bothered you over the last 5 or 10 years as a business person when the prevailing metric is the unique page view, which really doesn't take into account people who spend hours a day on a platform, and it gives somebody who arrives via Facebook or Bleacher Report or another distributor for 10 seconds and doesn't return, it gives them the same weight as a diehard fan, but that's what the advertisers care about. Are you excited for a world where that may change?
Yeah, I don't know if bothers the right word. It's just, you know, I used to do a lot more sales. So like what you say, when you're in those meetings with advertisers, and they don't seem to understand that it's flyby traffic and we have real sticky traffic, that can be frustrating at times. And the Facebook changing their algorithm certainly proved that. I don't know if I'm excited about it, but it just, and it wasn't on purpose, that's just how we developed, but it just backs up, I think, a lot of things that I believed in and had been saying for a while, that there is a difference. I always use the analogy, if somebody's watching TV and, you know, they click across all 100 channels rapidly, nonstop, all 100 channels have one click. That's fine. That every channel can be like, hey, we have one unique person as well. Our crowd tends to just stay on us for half an hour. So to me, that's a very big difference in how you're advertising. So I guess, I don't know if frustrates is the right word, but it puts us in a better position to compete for ad dollars.
Including talents and people on the business side, how many employees does Barstool have now, and how many do you expect to have 12 months from now?
We have 90 right now, and honestly, I have no idea how many we will have. I have pretty much carte blanche. If we find somebody who I think is talented on the content side, we can hire them. It's growing pains with that because we are hiring talent people and then we're kind of out of whack. Like we don't have enough editors and video production to support sometimes how much content the talent's putting out. So it's a give take. And then Erica on the business side has her mandates and what she thinks we need. So if I had to guess, we'll probably double that or so maybe in the next year or two.
So you guys hired yesterday Casey Smith from NBC Sports Boston. Could you have fathomed like 5 years ago that you would be poaching somebody from the regional sports network that broadcasts the Celtics?
No, not really. No. It's a nice development. And, you know, yeah, we seem to be one of the few places I feel like that are actively hiring talent, where most of the places are doing reverse, where they're consolidating. So no, I couldn't have imagined that. And you know, it, for the most part, Casey being an example, like super excited. Like it wasn't an overly hard pitch. She gets us, she grew up with us. She understands the value, she understands the opportunity. We're very good. If you want to be a star or build your personality, we are very good at that. That's what we put all our eggs in our baskets. That's what we do. We mostly homegrown talent. But somebody like Casey, I think, is going to be a gigantic star. So we're excited.
You did have a case in the last week of a non-homegrown talent that didn't work out in Michael Rapaport. You obviously know that you have many detractors, and so I'm interested in how you kind of justify to them or to anybody the idea that you can if a joke doesn't land, you'll be totally forgiving and you won't fire them, and you want people to push the boundaries, but if somebody insults the fan base, that's where you draw the line.
Yeah, I mean, we are a rough and tumble group. It's kind of like a locker room, and I insult my friends and how I talk. I mean, I think Rapport went way over the line, even before he insulted the Stoolies. But when you're – and I'm a pretty good judge of intent and when someone's busting balls and when somebody's just being an asshole. Rapport was being an asshole. And then he further said, basically, for those who don't know, we call our fan base Stoolies, like a parrot head would be a Jimmy Buffett fan, deadhead, you know, Grateful Dead, whatever. And he said, basically, if you're a Stoolie, you're a loser. It's very hard for me to justify paying somebody's checks, bills, and telling them to support their podcast and all these endeavors when you just called everybody who likes our fan base a loser. So that was a no-brainer decision. I've never, like, Nobody's ever done that here before. We can criticize our fans, we can criticize people, but to say everybody who supports us is a loser, especially when you're kind of like an outsider to begin with, it was a very easy decision, not to mention the fact he was personally attacking Kevin and other people. It was like he went off the rails. It sucked.
We've talked a lot about business successes of Barstool and platform growth over the last couple of years. The one thing that really backfired, obviously, was Barstool Vantalk. I don't want to rehash all of the things that happened when ESPN was doing or should have been doing due diligence, but it was a long process to get that show on the air. So as a very engaged observer of both of your companies, I thought that once it got to the air, they were secure with what had been said on Barstool in the past and what Barstool was all about. But I'm wondering, if you could do that all over, knowing what you know now, what would you do differently, if anything?
It's a great question. We've talked about it. Internally, Eric or myself, if we knew everything that we knew, would we do it again the same way? And we would, because I actually, ironically, it invigorated our fan base. Like, controversies like that make our fans like us more. They make us hate ESPN more. It makes us stronger in the long run. So I should say I'm glad we went through it. Like, I wouldn't rewind and say I wish that didn't happen. The reason I did the deal or approved the deal and made sure Barstool was in the name is I want people to find out about Barstool who didn't know who we were. We believe in our content, and if they found out about us, they'd like us. It didn't happen the way I thought it would happen. I thought they'd find out through BVT, the TV show. They found out because it was front page news everywhere that ESPN canceled our show. But the narrative that there's some renegade website that's not PC and won't apologize, I didn't hate that message being splashed across every media, you know, website in the country. I had no problem with that. Now, the flip side is I would have never done this deal to begin with. Like, so once we're through it, I wouldn't have been like, oh, I wish I had that back. I think it helped more than it hurt. ESPN always was wary of doing this deal. I sat in meetings where I thought they were disrespectful to the brand. I didn't understand why we were sitting there. And frankly, I had major second thoughts about it, but for the benefit of really Dan and PFT really wanted to do it, the benefit overall of the brand. But it was a partner who was uneasy with us for the beginning. I ignored my gut instinct. I said, all right, they're saying all the right things at times, so let's give this a shot. But it was clear they never were overly comfortable with it. They tried to make themselves comfortable with it. They said they were comfortable with it, but they weren't. And it was sort of obvious. Like, they just have little backhanded insults and little things. It's like, do you really know who you're doing business with? And it's clear they really didn't. So I should just trust in my instinct, and we should only do business with people who truly appreciate what we're doing. Like, you can't get Barstool without getting Barstool. You just can't. They thought they could, and it blew up in everybody's faces.
And individually, you become extremely recognizable. I assume you must get stopped on the street wherever you are now dozens of times a day. Am I correct in that assumption?
Yeah. Yep.
Are there ever times where you wish you could blend in for a night, a week? I know clearly this is the life you chose. You've sought the limelight. You enjoy all your fans, but I feel like there's got to be times, though, right, where you wish you had to say to yourself?
No, it's very rare. I mean, I'm not like Leonardo DiCaprio. I mean, it's the perfect level of fame. I mean, our fans, 99.9.999 are very nice. They're just like, hey, what's up, Dave? And they maybe want a picture, but they're super friendly. They're our fans. I mean, I started this in my basement basically just so I could have a $60,000 a year job of something I didn't hate. I appreciate every second, and you know, I sometimes can't even believe where we are. So no, that actually does not bother me ever. It's never like, oh, I wish I could have wish that guy didn't ask for a picture. No, never.
I'll get you out here on this. I talked to Erica about this a couple weeks ago. What would be the positives versus negatives of potentially getting reacquired at like a gobsmacking valuation by a major media institution or just otherwise?
Well, hopefully the positive would be I get a big fat check and then I can disappear forever. if I'm not getting paid on that, if I assume that would be, you know, it's funny. This is going to be a kind of a random one, but I did pizza today with Tucker Carlson, like he was a guest, and we were waiting for the pizza. Yeah, no, he had straight tie actually, and the pizza was late, so we're just sitting there waiting. And he's actually a big fan, a legitimate fan of the site. And he couldn't believe that I actually had total control of the content. He just couldn't believe. He's like, "You're telling me corporate doesn't tell you to tone it down?" Or I'm like, "They don't. I have total control. It was always part of the deal. People said I wouldn't, but I do." And to circle back, if we got sold to some company of your description,
like AT&T,
I don't
hear something like that.
I have a hard time believing the content would exist as it exists now, which is I am the top of the food chain for content. Nobody ever is like, "Hey, watch out for this advert." I mean, sometimes people come up and be like, "You just killed Coca-Cola and we have a big proposal. Can you try not to do that?" And we'll evaluate it. But we never get in trouble. So, you know, that I could see if we get for that deal that you propose, I better get a check. and be fine. Like you want to turn us into vanilla ice cream or whatever you want to do, that's fine. I got my money, I'm out. So if we don't get that, I don't trust that deal.
Well, I presume that you would. So it's got to.
Oh, then I guess
that goes into your calculus.
Yeah, sign them up. Let me get out. I'm good with that then.
All right, thanks, Dave. We really appreciate your time. Dave Portnoy, founder, head of content at Barstool Sports. This is the Glass Half Empty podcast.
You're welcome. Thanks.
Such turned stranger.